Hey, I'm Tamara Kendacker, and you're listening to The Decibel from the Globe and Mail. The Catholic Church has been under a lot of pressure to make amends in Canada since First Nations this summer announced that over 1,000 unmarked graves have been found at the sites of former residential schools. For over a century, Indigenous children were taken from their families and forced to go to these schools as part of a system designed to strip them of their language and culture, and where thousands of them died. The Catholic Church ran about 60% of these schools, and it's been facing calls not only for the Pope to issue a formal public apology and to release historical records that would shed light on who the children were and how they died, but also to pay for its role in the system financially. As part of an earlier settlement, the church was supposed to try and raise $25 million for healing and reconciliation programs, but it never met that goal. And now, as the discoveries of the graves have revived the conversation around reparations, many Indigenous leaders are calling for a more substantial reckoning. There have always been questions, though, around how much money the church has and whether or not it can afford to do this. My colleagues Tom Cardoso and Tavia Grant have been investigating this.
What we found was that the Roman Catholic Church in Canada took in $886 million in donations in 2019. This would make them the largest charity in the country by a wide margin.
Tom is on the show today, and we're going to talk about what we know about the church's finances and what this means for how it can be held accountable for its role in the residential school system. You're listening to The Decibel. Tom, welcome. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell me why you first started looking into how much money the Catholic Church has in Canada.
It's a question that's been asked for a very long time. People have wondered for decades, centuries, millennia, what the church's holdings look like. So following the revelation at Kamloops of, the discovery of the grave sites, we began to ask a question about reparations. We were hearing from survivors, from leaders of Indigenous communities, from experts who've studied the topic of reconciliation for a very long time. These people were all saying that the Catholic Church in particular had not met the commitments that it had made as part of the Indian Residential School Settlement Agreement. Mm-hmm. And so we began to look into this. I was working with my colleague Tavia Grant, and we learned that the Catholic Church had made three commitments back in 2006, 2007, when the IRSSA the deal was struck. Mm-hmm. So the first commitment was for $29 million, most of which would go to a national charity, a national foundation called the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, which would distribute these monies to Indigenous communities. The second commitment was $25 million in in-kind church services, so religious ceremonies, other events that the church might put on that would be specific to Indigenous communities. And the third promise that they made was to raise $25 million in a national best efforts fundraising campaign that would collect these monies and again disburse them towards reconciliation and healing. But as my colleague Tavia reported more than a month ago now, the church actually only ended up raising $3.7 million of that $25 million commitment, that last commitment. And so we were hearing from a lot of leaders, a lot of experts who were saying that the church had not met its promise. Legally, it was released from that commitment following a court case in 2014, 2015. But these leaders, these experts were saying that morally, that commitment had never been met, and that even though they're not legally required to meet that commitment anymore, they should still aim to do it.
You mentioned the word reparations, right? Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could just expand on that. What do you mean by the word reparations, and what kind of response are Indigenous leaders calling for now from the church since these graves were found?
Yeah, so I think it's important to note that there is a difference between restitution, or the legal commitments that the church had made in 2007, and reparations, which are a much broader issue. Reparations are, You know, the idea that these groups, you know, be they Indigenous communities or individuals, have been disadvantaged not only literally, you know, by virtue of having to go to residential schools and the abuse that they suffered at those schools, but also the snowball effect that has on those communities. So reparations is a much broader question than restitution, and it's much more about trying to repair and set right some of these historical wrongs.
So how has the church explained to this point why it wasn't able to meet that best efforts fundraising goal of $25 million?
We do have the statements of the church's lawyer at the time on the record from our reporting in 2016. He told the Globe's reporters at the time that there were just no funds to be had at that point. They'd gone to, you know, their parishes, they'd gone to parishioners and asked for money, and $3.7 million was all that they managed to raise. And then, in fact, many of those parishes were near bankruptcy at that point in 2014 and 2015. They were never required to raise exactly $25 million. They just had to prove that they put best efforts into raising that money. But as that conversation has evolved, given all these ongoing discoveries in British Columbia, elsewhere, the conversation has moved beyond the $25 million figure. We spoke to the leader of the Federation of Sovereign Indigenous Nations, Chief Bobby Cameron, who said that $25 million is not enough. He said that he thinks that fundraising should look at something in excess of $500 million. If you use the numbers that have been estimated, the costs, the estimated cost of locating and repatriating all of these, you know, people, children who've been buried, it could be well over $1 billion potentially.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I read in your story that the church has been able to fund some of its priorities in the years since, right? Like in 2016, the St. Michael's Cathedral was reopened and its restoration cost $128 million.
There has been money for other projects. And the church has occasionally sold property to pay for some of those projects. In 2004, the Sisters of Charity of Montreal, better known as the Grey Nuns, they sold their mother house to Concordia University because they were downsizing for $18 million. That was a single property sale. The Archdiocese of Toronto struck a deal, according to its 2018 audited financial statements, to sell one of their parishes for a minimum of $44 million.
So you've been looking into this over the last few weeks, and to the best of your knowledge, how much money does the Catholic Church have in Canada?
There is a lot of money. Their assets are incredibly vast. We ended up working with an organization called Charity Intelligence Canada that does transparency audits and financial reporting on Canada's charitable sector. And in working with them, what we found was that the Roman Catholic Church in Canada took in $886 million in donations in 2019. This would make them the largest charity in the country by a wide margin, if you were to combine them. They had billions of dollars in assets, $5.2 billion in assets. If you account for their liabilities, their debts, their loans, etc., their net assets are $4.1 billion. So any way you slice it, this is a massive organization.
And my understanding is that this is still an undercount.
This is actually an aggregate of 3,446 different Catholic registered charities across the country. And the reporting varies from parish to parish. So, for instance, the Archdiocese of Toronto, they reported $2 in property assets in 2019.
Yeah, but their audited financial statements show nearly $940 million in property, right? Can you explain that discrepancy between how much money they say they have in real estate and what their audited financial statements show?
Yeah, it's a $1 billion discrepancy nearly. And the answer is that they're using a very unusual form of accounting to arrive at that $2 figure. The reason they give is that the Archdiocese of Toronto's properties are used in perpetuity. They're used indefinitely. In normal accounting, what happens is that you have a property, say it's a $10 million property, and you have to estimate its useful life. That's the term accountants use, and write that into your books, into your financial statements. And so each year, what you'll do is you'll depreciate that capital asset. In other words, you'll discount it each year. So it'll be 10 million one year. It might be 9 million the next, 8 million the year after that. And within a certain period, often 30 to 40 years, that asset will eventually be worth $0 on the books or a nominal value, $1, et cetera. And so what the church is doing is very different from this. They're not actually discounting their property. They're saying that because there's no useful life to their property because it's useful indefinitely, there's no way to estimate its value. And so they assign it a value of $2. But of course, this has the implication of making it seem like they have $2 in property when you look at their CRA statement. So at the very least, the amount of property that we're seeing in those CRA numbers I just provided you with, you know, $3.3 billion in property, they're off by $940 million alone, given the Toronto, the Archdiocese of Toronto.
So you mentioned that the amount of money that the Catholic Church has makes it the biggest charity in Canada by a wide margin. And I wonder if you can just like put that into context for us. So how does the Catholic Church's wealth compare to other charities or companies in the country?
Yes. So when we were talking to Charity Intelligence about these figures, they said that it's an enormous organization. The largest charity in Canada, according to them, is World Vision Canada. According to Charity Intelligence, World Vision took in $217 million. The Catholic Church combined took in $886 million. So it just completely eclipses the largest charity in Canada.
So is it fair to say then that the Catholic Church has more than enough money to compensate residential school survivors to fulfill this obligation of $25 million and to give survivors more money in reparations?
A lot of the experts we spoke to seem to think that that's the case. If you look at the Catholic Church's numbers, they declared $110 million in profit. Surplus is usually what that's called in charity circles. In 2019. That's money that was just left over at the end of that year, after all the expenses, all the debts, everything. There are other organizations that have pledged to set aside money for reconciliation efforts. The United Church sets aside 10% of the assets from its property sales towards reconciliation, for instance. So there are examples out there of other organizations finding ways to pay what some say they're morally owed.
So what does the church say about the possibility of reparations or even meeting that fundraising goal of $25 million?
The church hasn't said very much so far. Their answer in the past has been that it is a decentralized organization and that it's up to each individual, you know, parish, each individual church leader to raise whatever funds they can. Some have been very outspoken in saying that this money needs to be raised. The bishop for Sault Ste. Marie told us that the church had been taking a, quote, duck and cover approach, and that they had to be much more forthcoming about raising these funds and making an effort to, again, pay what some call a moral commitment.
I've seen a lot of stories about Catholics being very disillusioned by this whole thing. And I wonder if there is pressure internally for the church to do something, like from within the Catholic community?
There has been some pressure from within the church itself. Not only are there certain bishops, like I mentioned, there are also, you know, individual devout Catholics who are pushing the church to do more. I think it's worth noting that many Indigenous people are Catholic, right? So Lorraine Whitman, the president of the Native Women's Association of Canada, has been to the Vatican many times, and she said that she feels sickened to know about all of the physical, emotional, and, you know, just overall trauma that Indigenous children have gone through. And visiting the Vatican, she says, you know, she sees all these beautiful paintings and she wonders, you know, how much would a single one of those fetch if they were to sell it? And could that money go to Indigenous people? There are also growing petitions calling for the church to respond in a stronger manner. The church is not walking to the same step in every single case. There are many voices, and some of them are quite forcefully saying that the church has to do more.
So let's say reparations do happen. Where would that money go?
Well, there's a couple of different ways that that money could be allocated. One would be to give money directly to survivors, which is more or less what the residential school settlement agreement did, right? People would receive $10,000 or more, depending on their residential school experiences. But another option would be to revitalize some of these indigenous-led, indigenous-focused organizations that were really working in these communities. I spoke with Mike DeGagne, who was the executive director of the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, which was supposed to receive most of that $29 million that the Catholic Church had set aside. And he said that that foundation disbursed $610 million over a 16-year period. And they'd worked in indigenous communities right across the country, First Nations, Métis, and Inuit. By the time the foundation was shut down in 2014, he said that there were 1,000 employees within programs in the community. So accountants, HR people, directors, counselors, elders, all indigenous people who were doing work directly in the communities that needed it most. And he talked about the need for new institutions, more institution building directed towards indigenous communities. And the Aboriginal Healing Foundation, of course, was run outside of the government. So it was an entirely indigenous run organization that did not have reporting lines or any kind of structure that connected it directly to the government. The government definitely gave it a lot of grants and a lot of money flowed from the government to the foundation, but it was an entirely indigenous-led organization, which the people I've spoken with have told me was really important and is going to be very important if reparations ever do become a thing, giving the money directly to indigenous people who can then administer it as they see fit.
Okay, so I know you're still digging into this and that you're also looking for tips from the public. So can you just tell me a bit about that and just tell listeners how they can reach you if they want to?
Yeah, absolutely. So this has been so far about a 6-week investigation, but we're still working away. We have more that we'd like to look into in terms of the Catholic Church's dealings with the residential school settlements and their finances. And so we're asking readers and listeners to email us if they have any information on either of those things, or if they're an expert on charity finance or anything of the sort, if they can email us and reach out, that would be much appreciated. If you do get in contact with us, we are happy to keep you anonymous. Nothing that you email us will be published without your consent, but it would just be great to hear from you. You can email us at tips@globeandmail.com. That's tips@globeandmail.com.
Tom, thank you so much for your reporting on this, and it was great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, that's it for today. I'm Tamara Kendacker. Our producers are Madeline White and Kasia Mihailovich. Michal Stein edited this episode with help from our intern, Rebecca Weston. David Crosby edits the show, and Angela Pacenza is our executive editor. Thank you so much to Tom Cardoso for coming on the show. You can find him on Twitter at @Tom_Cardoso. And again, if you have tips for Tom and the investigative team, you can email tips@globeandmail.com. You can email us at thedecibel@globeandmail.com. Let us know what you want us to cover next or say hello. And if you haven't done this already, wherever you listen to podcasts, please give us a follow so you never miss a single episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.